Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 129 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively right here on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net. Stop by crmw.net and see what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Friday, March the 21st, 2008. So if you're listening at shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Friday that is March the 21st, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you are more than welcome to call in and participate with myself and the guest, whom I will be introducing shortly. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, you can use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and it rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I do try to check the mail during the breaks. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, you'll find links to all of the guests, as well as to the guests' sites and audio archives from past shows. You'll find links to the chat room, which is active as I speak. And tonight would be a good evening to join the chat room. We have a number of people there. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com to the Head On Radio Network main site. That's the headonradionetwork.com main site. And you can find the links to the other hosts and find out about the other progressive programming on the network, of which I'm only a small part. You'll find links there at headonradionetwork.com for the PayPal buttons. And if you'd like to help us out and participate in supporting the Head On Radio Network, as we say, the funds do not go in our pockets. The funds go to keep the cassetting and the CDs passing bits and the hard drive spinning and the CPU fans cooling and the packets passing. It's to keep liberal radio, progressive radio on the air. That's at headonradionetwork.com, and you'll also find information there about the mailing address if you prefer to support the show that way. And as I say, the links and information about the other programming on the Head On Radio Network. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, also for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. It's good to be back again this evening. Last night we were rudely interrupted about 40 minutes into the show by an internet glitch, but I think we've gotten that all worked out. Tonight is a guest I'm looking forward to speaking with. It's one of our music guests. As you know, we talk about so many subjects that are disturbing and weighty and prejudicial during the course of the week that it's always a joy to speak with one of our music guests and take our minds off it. And what better to do on a Friday evening than have a very famous music guest indeed. You know, this particular program has been blessed by not only wonderful musicians, but wonderful archivists and DJs. We've had VJC, we've had Tom Moulton, we've had Bobby Vitaretti, Larry Sanders, Glenn Rivera, we've had Tommy from Disco Delivery up in Canada, we've had Alex Dickin from Euroflash, Jerry Bonham, Hank Steinhauer, we've had Steve Skinner, Rick Ashram, who is also known as DJ RXMX. We've had Martin Verlaine from the Netherlands. Now, if you were to ask any one of these folks that I've just mentioned to you what's wrong with this list, and I think each and every one of them would tell you what's wrong with this list, is that it does not include Tom Savarese. We're including Tom Savarese and fixing that tonight. Tom Savarese was born in Manhattan, which is the very epicenter, and someone who has remained at the center of it all. He knew everyone there was to know and everywhere there was to be. Of course, in New York City, the nightclub scene back in the 70s was the very heart of fashion and cool. It was where everyone, from the Shah of Iran to Andy Warhol, spent their evenings. One moment, just talking to the studio, just fixing up something here. Okay, there we go. And yes, where was I? And Tom was there. Tom was there playing for the Shah of Iran, Andy Warhol. While they broke trends and set the latest fashions, Tom was there for it all. Tom also is a man who single-handedly made club owners aware that DJs are not just some guy spinning records, but they are in fact entertainers and performers. And it was Tom who pretty much single-handedly related to the club owners that handing the DJ $30 under the table as they walked out of the door at the end of the evening was not going to work anymore. So it was Tom who brought the recognition of the value that DJs brought to clubs to the mind of the owners. Tom was also voted as the number one disco DJ for 2 years in a row at the annual Billboard Magazine's Disco Forum. Tom has letters of thanks from everyone from Barbara Streisand to George McRae. Tom is also the first program director for the legendary remix service DiscoNet, and those of you who listen to this show regularly will know that I consider DiscoNet to be pretty much the holy grail of remixes. We often run DiscoNet remixes on Strictly Confidential, and all of you have heard them. I've had many positive comments about them, and they're all wonderful. In fact, Tom's early mixes on several of the very first issues of DiscoNet are still sought after, and they're considered valuable collector's item. Tom did a tour of DJing in Italy, and also has worked as a DJ for some of the top U.S. clubs. Examples: 12 West, the Ice Palace, the Sandpiper, Flamingo, Trocadero Transfer. It's a short list. He has gold records from Chic, Dance Dance Dance, Peter Brown, Do You Want to Get Funky with Me from Macho, I'm a Man. He has been photographed with everyone from Donna Summer to Linda Clifford. Tom has played for Metropolitan Museum of Art, Saks Fifth Avenue, Resorts International Hotel and Casino, the St. Regis. He's performed and played for Jackie Onassis at a party honoring Pulitzer Prize winner for poetry. Tom's been written up in the New York Times, Billboard, Penthouse, Soho News, The Village Voice, After Dark, and the coverage continues as recently as last year. Just in 2007, he was covered several articles, I believe, in U Magazine featured Tom Savarese. We won't even bother to go into the television appearances. So I think you can easily see why I would tell you that any of the DJs that I listed off earlier would quickly point out that Tom Savarese was missing from this list, and we're glad to have him with us tonight. And also, I'd like to thank our new listeners and welcome our new listeners from India and Dubai who are joining the show this evening on Strictly Confidential to hear Tom. They're special listeners. Tom, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Tom.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir, I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, I can.
Good.
How exciting, Peter.
It is always exciting to have someone of your stature on the show and someone with your history.
It's not that. This technology is what excites me now. I mean, the fact that we can do this is amazing. I don't know how we lived without all of this before.
Frankly, Tom, I feel the same way. When I sometimes shake my head in wonderment at how we pull just the network together. We have a host in Australia and hosts all over the U.S., and we have a studio in West Virginia, and you're calling from somewhere near the West Coast, and it's just amazing how it all falls together. When it works, it works well.
Yeah, I'm calling from 5,500 feet in the center of Arizona.
Wow. Do you have a view or what?
I have a view. From my house, I have a 270-degree view of these mountains.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Okay.
It must be beautiful, especially this time of the afternoon. I take it, about sunset there now?
Yes. My house is almost, I think it's 2 degrees off of exact north, south, east, and west. So the front of my house faces the west, the south, and the rest you can figure out. So if I leave the blinds open in the front, the sun comes into the living room and the cats just have a good time.
You have cats. That's wonderful. They are always a blessing. Tom, you're such an amazing background. You know, all of the music listeners and the DJs who are tuned in tonight already know who you are. We have a large number of straight listeners, straight progressive listeners, and also an LGBT audience who might not. Tom, how in the world did you get started with this?
Well, you know, during this week, during the preparation for all of this, I had a lot of time to look back, you know, and think about what I was going to say to you, what we would just talk about. And how did I get started? Well, I have to say it was my family unwittingly starting the whole thing. I never really realized it until I started to think about my relatives. My Aunt Lil, God rest her soul, loved me beyond, I don't know. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, I would say in about 1950-52, right there, she gave me, what, do you remember those old RCA Victor fat spindle? They just played 45s.
Tom, I remember it well. I got one for Christmas when I was a little boy, probably around 56 or 57, right in there. I remember it well, yeah.
Okay, so she gave me that. And along with it, she gave me RCA, a couple of the products from RCA, which were on these translucent kind of vinyl. It was Roy Rogers and Edith Piaf and stuff like that.
Wow.
She gave me sets of those, maybe two or three. And so what happened was I got so into the records that in grammar school, somebody showed me how to alligator clip the speakers. So I, in my mother's basement, on the other end, I put a speaker, and the 245 pumped out, right? And I'd invite the kids over from the 7th and 8th grade, and we'd dance, and my mother would have a stroke because she thought the floor would break in the house because we were dancing. So I guess reading the handwriting on the wall, which I never realized before. I've been doing this since I was a kid. So.
Well, that's exciting.
That's
in fact, those old.
How I got started professionally was another, a little bit different story.
Well, thank goodness for your aunt. She had a lot of class handing you Edith Piaf.
My family, I'm an adopted child, and I was loved even, if it can be that way, more than if I were their own. And I was the only child in a family where there weren't too many children. There were four brothers, and I mean four siblings, and I was special to them. So,
well, Tom, we're posting the link. We're posting the link in the chat room to your information on DJ's portal. For those of you who are not in the chat room, the easiest way to get to it is stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com. You'll see a link on today's date to that. And the reason I point that out, Tom, are there some precious pictures of you as a little boy.
Yes.
And is your aunt?
That's at the Bronx Zoo. And I was with my father. I was 3 years old when I was adopted. I have a memory back as far as a grand piano that was in my life very, very early, maybe around three or something. But before that, I can't remember very much. I was in foster homes and stuff like that. But I eventually wound up in the Savarese house. Thank God.
Yes, thank God. I'm glad you did. Well, Tom, it's a long way from the basement of the Savarese house to some of the most well-known clubs in the world. Yeah. How did you make this transition?
Well, let me see. I went to Fire Island. When was it? I don't know, but maybe the end of the 60s, early 70s. And they were playing recorded music. And Bobby DJ was there. Anyway, Bobby DJ and I became friends, and that's, and, you know, the rest is history. And how I did it? Well, I studied. I practiced. I was working two and three jobs. I had to buy all my records and equipment. And when I saw the process of what happens when you sequence things together, I realized that I had a talent that I was able to perceive and read the room. And yeah, that's what separates, you know, because what we do as dance hall disc jockeys, which I am not anymore, I'm more than that, is that we have to read the floor to decide where's the next move, you know, and how do you move them and how do you change it, and, you know, to keep everybody entertained.
Well,
and that's
Tom,
what
I did
entertain.
Yeah, so I think that is a gift that cannot be taught. You certainly did, and I think the ability to read a room and to intuitively know what to run next to keep them happy and to keep everything flowing is something that cannot be learned. It's just something that's innate.
No, and this is, well, Peter, this is a road here. I mean, we could do three shows on how I do what I do, because no one ever speaks to me about that. They want to know about 54. They want me to support their event. But they never talk to me about how things really happen, what's really going on in there, you know? And here's my opportunity.
Well, yes, I find it fascinating, actually. I DJed in some gay clubs in Portland, Oregon during the 80s, so I know a bit about it, so obviously I find all of this fascinating. And you mentioned Fire Island there at the Sandpiper. Now, I understand the sound system there was exquisite. What was it like playing there on that system?
Okay. It's not my best experience, the Sandpiper. It's a good experience. It was a small room. If you were a little bit stoned, you could think you were on a houseboat. Okay? It had that kind of a feel to it. There were windows along the sides, and you could look out onto the water. And across the ceiling, they put up regular Christmas lights, white Christmas lights. And they had a sequencer on it. And the ceiling was low, so I think initially they had Bose in there, the Bose 901s. And then Peter Spahr came along with his technology and built speakers for them. And the ceiling, the main thing about it is you were engulfed in there. And the music was never far away. The source of the music, the speakers were never really that far away from you. And plus, it's a captive audience, and everybody's on everything there. So, but it was a dancing experience, you know?
Yes. Now, Tom, I've been doing some asking around about you this week. It's just part of what I do. And I understand, I've heard through the grapevine that you, in mixing music, have a You like to let the, if not all, the at least the majority of the of a 12-inch single, say, play before mixing at it, whereas a lot of DJs hop
Peter,
in somewhere
you are
during...
sharp.
Well, I talk to some sharp people. And,
okay,
I
want to tell you why. I play as much of the record as I can because it's the record that's important. What I'm doing is finessing the atmosphere. In other words, people knew by the first 16 measures of the song what song it was. So they were listening. They were not hypnotized. Today they are hypnotized because the machine is so big today. And the idea of letting a record sound like it's changing seems to be anathema to all of these new disc jockeys. And I believe if it happens at the right time, you sort of know and you expect it and you're ready to step into it.
Well, Tom, that's well said. In fact, there have been many comments made on the show that, that some of the newer, more electronic... Now, this is, of course, not altogether true, but a lot of it can sound very, very similar, one song to the next. And so there's this what seems to be a continuing a sort of a sound throughout the entire evening.
Yes, well, that's what they're doing today because the club owners have forced the DJs into playing a certain way because the minute you start getting paid for something you love to do, there are expectations and performance pressures. So it would be like the Studio 54 disc jockey who Richie Kazar, who got the job after I turned it down, was perfect for the club. And I really, really mean it. And I always liked what he did. But he had the ability of taking the same 30 records and playing them all night, differently in different orders. He was very skilled at that. And that's all they really wanted there. They weren't interested in being educated. They were only there for an hour and a half, so people could see who was there. And it wasn't about dancing, really. It was about, I don't know, being seen and what you had on and, you know, very different than some of the other places that I have worked.
Yes, and some of the reading I've done about you, apparently Studio 54 was very much a meld of the how can I say, the fashion industry. In other words, I can almost quote the text, that the DJs began spending time during the day at the fashion houses, and the fashion houses were at the clubs at night dancing. How did that interplay work?
Well, okay. I was working at Hurrah, which was in existence before Studio 54, and it was about maybe 5 or 6 blocks away from the Studio 54, and I was playing to all those people, the fashion people. As soon as Studio 54 opened, it took everybody else, it took that whole crowd away. So Hurrah had to realign its dominoes. And did I answer this question? Say it again.
I was wondering about the meld. Now, it seems that a lot of the fashion houses and music that they ran on the runways tended to come from some of the big clubs, and really was introduced by the DJs who played there. And it just seemed to me that to be an interplay between the two, but because the runway music was so important to what to introduce a mood or a feel to the clothes.
Well, you know, I recently saw a video of a lot of the songs that these people would come to the clubs at night after they finished designing or working or doing their art on 7th Avenue, they would come to party and have a good time at the clubs that were dominant in New York, and they would hear songs, you know? And if they liked the disc jockey, I think that had a lot to do with who was going to get the show. It's better now. because now there are just so many choices and so many ways to do things. And if I had the tools that were available to me now, then, oh, God only knows.
Well, Tom, moving back to the to your mixing style, it is far more difficult to mix out of a record into the, if you wait till the very end. It's far more convenient to use the break where the beats are stronger and you know, it's very predictable. So,
right.
I'm wondering about that style. Is that the artists loved you? I mean, you've got letters from Barbara Streisand, George McRae. Is that a mutual respect? Is that one of the things they loved about you, Tom? Was that you actually let their music play?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if they supported me because I supported them, because it was it's always the song. It's always the record. It was never me. I'm just the magician, the medium in the room. The people send me the power. I take it, analyze it, and push it back out. And the idea is to keep going higher and higher. It's like a Matisse. Would you present three quarters of a Matisse to a museum? No.
Huh.
And that's their work. The artist lived and dies for this music. They spend so much time on it. And it's not my place to cheat them out of the whole thing. It's a statement from beginning to end, generally, it's a statement from beginning to end. In other words, there's a reason for the beginning, and then the middle, and then the end. So I try to use all of it. It's not hard for me to do that. For me. It's not hard.
Yes. Tom, what was it like interacting with the record companies during that time frame? I understand from people that I've talked to who have either DJ'd or performed fairly recently that a lot of that has changed, that the record companies are sort of iron-fisted these days. Was it more of a relationship back then, or was there pressure from the companies to play certain tracks?
Okay, this is how I see it. This is what I see what happened. And in the beginning, let's take 1976 as the year, as the blossoming of this genre. And before that, I would get together with a couple of friends, and in the beginning, we went around to the record companies and we begged. Because most of us had to work two and three jobs for the extra money to go out and buy these records on a hit-and-miss basis. You know, we'd get an idea of what the artist, if the artist had a new record, we'd buy the album and then search to see if there was something usable. So eventually we got ourselves such a name that they started to give us product. And I remember that Atlantic Records was probably the first one, gave us everything they printed in a month. And that was wonderful. It was like giving kids candy. You would run home, or you'd get home, and you'd put them on the turntable, you'd listen, it would go over there, not good, or go over there, or you'd mark it as good, or whatever. And there was this discovery that excited you about presenting it to a group of people. And then when they tried to market this disco concept, they started to make judgments about how tracks should sound. In other words, they were formulating, first starts out with the drums and then and then, you know, it started to get very predictable. And I think that's what eventually happened to disco. I mean, when you try to capture something that's been going on for years without disco, which was dance, and we've been dancing since Stone Age, and they tried to commercialize it and market it, and you don't blame them for trying it. But I think eventually all the records began to sound alike that were designed for the disco dance floor.
I see.
And I think they burned out the bottom on it. Certainly didn't make me excited.
Yes, I have to agree that it began to sort of blur together, and it seemed to me to be that the artists had less input than the record companies did. And Tom, I want to ask you about DiscoNet. Now, the listeners, most of them who listen, know that I run DiscoNet Tracks, and they understand that it was I consider one of those fabulous remix services or DJ services. What was the reaction of the record companies to your taking their music and remixing it? Was that a big deal? How'd that work?
We didn't remix it. This is how he got away with it. He figured if he got 3-4 of the top disc jockeys in New York, and that we would get to put together 4 or 5 cuts on a side, that we would be instructional to other DJs that live in, the outskirts of major cities, and where the pulse, they're not on the pulse of what of how we do things, whereas the people in the city are. He got away with this because the record companies felt that he was promoting their product. So they didn't slap him with any performance rights and stuff like that. So he would just put out these DiscoNet records, and of course it had Bobby and my name and a few others on him, and eventually it had quite a few others. And he was successful with that. And what was really strange about all of that, it was vinyl to vinyl, meaning that we were creating other vinyl from vinyl. We're not doing it from 2-track masters or anything that had really a great signal. You know, we were doing regular vinyl records, putting it together in our house, which was good because we could be perfect. We could edit out, and put in a good mix, at least in theory. Anytime you're working from turntable to turntable, it's haphazard. And, it's the only thing. It's one of the things that bothered me about that time in time. It was the physical carrying of the records and, having to make sure they were in good shape so the needle wouldn't jump.
Yes. Yes. People don't always understand these days what it was like to lug. Most of us use milk.
We were changing records every 3.5-4 minutes. So that meant, and if you didn't want to be predictable, in other words, as you go along, you find these mixes that work so flawlessly, and then the audience knows that they work so flawlessly. So they're dancing along, and they think they're going to hear the record that they think, but you substitute something else, and you try to keep them off guard a little. But mistakes happen, and you sometimes play the wrong record. Some guy on MySpace said there's some guy in New Jersey that's selling the 6-CD set of mine. It's the only record of what I have left that I've done from back then. I don't have anything except for that one because I made it for this guy's house. He was having a party.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what was I going to say about that? He is now selling a 6-CD or 5-CD set of what I did. It's the only record of what I did back then. But some guy says something like, "Well, did you hear those train wrecks?" But some young guy from today who doesn't even know what we went through back then, about how 3.5 minutes sounds like a long time, but it's not when you're dancing along, you're moving lights,
Yes. There's very little concept. But I have to say, Tom, that I don't recall ever having heard a train wreck on DiscoNet. I must have missed
that. Peter, on DiscoNet, we had the option of doing it over. But when you're playing live, you can't go back and say, oops, I made a mistake, pick up the needle, put the new record down, and then mix it in. You know, you just keep going. And now, today, I can be perfect.
Yes, it's instantaneous. Push a button and it automatically syncs on beat. And it's,
well, no, I wouldn't touch a piece of equipment. You know, I'm an ITIS person. After I left in the 80s, when I realized I was going to starve doing this, I needed another career. And I went into, but now the computers, the software, and they're still not where I want them. But that's all right. At least I use this software, which I would say on a scale of 0 to 100, it's about a 75. It's good. The tracks that you got were mixed with that. They were normalized. They were outputted to a file and dumped through email. Can you believe it? I mean,
yes.
You know, so the technology now, if I had it then, you know, and I still want them to go faster because there are other things they're not considering, and that's why I don't work. There's no place for me to work.
Yeah, I understand. Yes, the equipment has certainly changed things. Tom, and looking back over your career, you've played, the list of clubs is just amazing to me. Which would you say was the one you have the fondest memories of?
I knew you were going to ask me that question.
You knew it was coming.
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask me that question. In the beginning of the week, I'm saying he's going to ask me. So, you know, and I think that the best place was the Ice Palace in Cherry Grove. I'm one of the few disc jockeys that played both the Pines and the Grove. I started in the Grove the summer before 12 West happened. And that was the best because the people were ready, they were appreciative, they would applaud and scream and holler. And it was like a summer vacation and I got paid, I had my own room, so I was a pig in shit.
Well, for some of our listeners who don't know, I believe the Cherry Grove was actually is part of the island. Is that right?
If you go out to, I want to say Syosset out on Long Island, you can either get there by seaplane or Long Island Railroad and then a taxi and then a ferry. So by the time you get there, you're dead. You know, if you're leaving work and you're going out to the island, that Friday night, you know, between all the 3 hours worth of traveling, can be quite a, you know, because you got to switch so many things. But I would say the Ice Palace was unadulterated. I was just another person playing records, and they appreciated me. And I did a good job, I would assume, because they liked me, you know, so. After that started the other stuff. Then the climb started in 1975. So I'm talking, the Ice Palace was probably the summer of 1975.
I see. And so that was before DiscoNet, before you were involved with DiscoNet.
Yes, before disco started. The first disco forum, I'm not accurate on the dates here, which was a disaster because it was just starting. May have been in 75 or 74, but it did not peak until 1976. And in September of 1975, I started at 12 West. And then that did it for me. I mean, as far as launching what I do.
Well, Tom, you eventually played at the Trocadero. How did you make it all? Were you invited to play at the Trocadero and you moved there from New York, or was it? How did that work? Because they couldn't be further apart, New York and Trocadero.
Well, Trocadero transfer was a duplicate of 12 West. I mean, you could almost, if you're in a stupor, think that you, although Trocadero was larger, but the same shape, the DJ booth was in the same place. There were things about it that were different, but generally, it was laid out almost the same. And Probe, too, in L.A. was, I have to say, I think, based on the design of 12 West, which was a very good design for a room. And, you know, so I Trocadero, I don't know how I got out there. The guy was doing a show. I mean, I know how I got out there. I don't know how it came about. It wasn't a great experience.
I see. Tom,
transfer was not a great experience.
I see. And that was because of the crowd and the pressures there?
No. It was because of what they thought about a disc jockey. In other words, most people think that what we do or is disposable. The club is the star. And if you don't work out, somebody else will work out. And Trocadero Transfer, you know, I don't like speaking badly about it, but it was the way that they treated me when I got there. I mean, they thought because I was gay that I would love to be thrown in the baths. And that's what they did. They picked me up at the airport in a limousine and took me right to the baths. I don't quite understand what that was for, but...
Well, one wonders. I think a hotel would be more appropriate, at least until you settle down. Straight to the baths, that's really off
the
chart.
Straight to the baths. And what were, then, I don't know if they were getting together where I was going to stay. It wasn't a hotel or anything because they weren't willing to do what was spring for what my contract said for. And I don't know whether Marilyn, my manager, got this for me. And I'm not even clear what year it happened. But I remember meeting Divine. And
yes,
we
yeah.
had such a great time and a true professional, lots of fun, and not at all what you think when you see somebody like that in the movies and stuff, like a real person, you know. And that made it worth it. So
yeah.
I think I arrived on Friday and left on Sunday, and I was happy to be out of there.
Wow. Talk about a whirlwind tour.
Yeah,
Tom,
well,
I want to ask.
Go ahead, Peter.
No, well, please finish your thought. I was going to switch, but I'm one that jumps from topic to topic.
Yeah, I've got Moon and Gemini. I can jump too.
Way to go! Well, it's something that I forgot to ask you about DiscoNet. I came across a fact today that I found fascinating, and I wanted to ask you about it. Apparently, DiscoNet had on staff a psychic and an astrologer.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that? Because that just seems really unique to me.
I'm also published on that subject of astrology that you probably don't know about. I did some computer work, calculations of planet positions and stuff like that for Donna Cunningham, who's world-renowned astrologer. She's more of a healing art kind of person rather than a Jean Dixon. You know, she's not going to write an everyday column for the news and you're going to go here today and meet. You know, she was more on the spiritual side of this thing. So Michael Wilkinson thought that if he knew about the birth of something, the birth of this side of the record, how well it could possibly do. And you know, people are probably listening to this and saying the guy's really out of his box.
You know? We are all out of our box.
Yes, he fought, and Jesse Portis Helm, who was the psychic astrologer, was so much fun to be with and be around that, you know, I didn't think it at all odd to have a psychic astrologer there. But I think basically what happened is that Jesse would plot new moves as a birth, and then he would construct a scenario around, and he was right quite a few times about it. So, you know, and they thought it was trendy at the time, an interesting enough item to be, you know, just to catch people's attention. He didn't do any writing for them, but he was on the team.
Well, Tom, I find it fascinating that you were involved. Well, let me start here. I recall in the past having seen software available that either purchase or you could, these days with the web, you can, you know, sign up for a site and put in all your pertinent information. Was the software that you were working on, was that published software to do that sort of thing, for someone to input their information for it to calculate all of the variables?
No. What I did is I took software that was published. I purchased it because I had my computer and stuff, and this stuff ran in DOS, and so the people that were publishing books on astrology or the moon cycle, they needed tables at the back of the book so that people could go there and look up and see where their moon was on that day and at that time. And I constructed all the tables with my computer, and, you know.
Oh.
So it was software, and it's not software I designed. I'm not that interested in, I like it, and it's interesting, but I don't have, the only thing that interests me about astrology now is astrocartography. Are you in the right place?
That's
a very interesting thing, and I say this, Peter, because we'll go back to San Francisco. In my chart, in San Francisco, Pluto is going right through it, right down the West Coast, up through Oregon and Washington, and that is not a great line to be living on. It's heavy. You feel it. It's like when you sense danger or there's something looming over. And that's what I felt the first time I went there. And yet I moved there like 4 years later or 3 years later. And I experienced some things in my life in San Francisco that I never experienced anywhere else. So, you know, it's not a place to live. And astrocartography, is very interesting because you find out why there are certain people in your life. I find that I meet people from Cleveland and Buffalo on a regular basis. And I've got strong lines through there. And it's just interesting. It's chewing gum for the mind. Do you know what I mean? I don't run my life by it, but some people do. Are you there? Petey? Peter?
Hey, Tom? Tom, you there, Tom? Oh, dear me. Okay. All right, stand by, please. We're trying to get Peter back. I think he's had a connection problem. We're going to go now to the mix track that Tom had provided, and hopefully have you reconnected with both Peter and Tom here in the very near future. Enjoy.
I'm Master.
And we're back. Oh, the joys of live radio. Tom, are you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can hear you fine. Tom, I apologize. We occasionally have a little hiccup in internet land, and
yes.
And I fell off. But I'll tell you what, Tom, I will edit the archive, and it will be as if it never happened.
Sure.
I'll send you the archive. I'll link to the archive tomorrow. We'll have...
And, you know,
Tom, I'm so sorry. I meant for us to talk about this the set that you sent that we just ran prior to running it. Unfortunately, we had to run that though while I was reconnecting. Now, Tom, that all works beautifully. That was an amazing mix, actually. And to close it out with Metro, it's just a really beautiful set.
Isn't that Metro incredible? I mean,
yes.
I never heard the song. I don't know where it went in life. I don't know if they were successful with it. But it is such a intellectually visual song. In other
it
words, it's
beautiful.
A story about how somebody gets on a train and is going to meet this man in London, and she came out in the rain, and you can see it. You can visualize it. And I was astounded when I heard it. And
I am too. And the chat room was enthralled by it. Also, all of us thought it was beautiful. And the segue into it, the whole mix led up to that. It was priceless.
The slow down. In other words, I was in Tones Art, and Tones Art's running 10 beats faster. So I let the program slow me down. The keys were matched, and you just stepped into it. That's technique. You couldn't do it. You couldn't do it live, but you can do it with the software, because the software slows you down in every 16 measures, you know what I'm saying? You feel it. You know it's slowing. The pitch is the same, and everything's the same. And you know, this is what I was telling you about before, you know that the record is going to change. So you're expecting it. And then when it changes into that, I thought it was great. I was happy with it. And how that mix came about was, I'm sorry, Peter, I didn't do it for this application, what we're talking about, but the two women who are head of U Magazine in the Middle East there, they fell in love with, what is that group, Supreme
Berlin?
Pleasure.
Oh,
and
I see.
They fell in love with them. So I strung together the first three, which are three of their songs, and then I went on to play, you know, and I sent it to them, and they said, you know, on Saturday when they come into work, they turn the volume up, the building, she said, shakes. She said, everybody comes running in asking, who is that?
Really?
You know, and it just touched me, you know. So I sent you a copy. I don't know if it's identical. I think it's the same file. I think.
Well, it's stunning, really. And this brings to mind, Tom, do you do custom mixing like this for the fashion industry or for individuals or for any sort of venue? Because it's stunning. It really is.
I have been out of the business for a while. And when I say out of the business, in other words, I didn't do this. Oh, Peter, there's such a long story about how I felt. I was a 33-year-old man in 1976.
Yeah.
And I was not a 20-year-old man. I was looking for a way. I love to do this. You know, what I do, what you heard.
Yeah.
But there was no career there. And I had to make an intellectual decision about what I was going to do for the rest of my life. So I decided that circumstances, you know, a leaf in the wind I am. And I luckily fell on the right track with computers, and now it's all back together again, and here I am doing it. And yes, I do it. The people in the Middle East have asked, we want all of your CDs. I said, well, I don't have any CDs. I said, she says, well, what? I said, I will mix something together for you at no charge, because I don't want to get slammed for performance rights and all that other stuff. So I basically will work on special projects. And how, that's another process of how that happens. You know, how do I work on something without being there? And that's another conversation.
Well, is your music being played in the Middle East now, in clubs in the Middle East?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Now, that's impressive. Now, by the Middle East, do you tell us some more about that? This is an incredible, who knew?
This is all an accident about how this came about. Because I am a New York City boy, born and raised, and I'm living out here at 5,500 feet in the middle of nowhere, perfectly removed from a life, a very different life than what I've led before. But I have this music. I have the tools. So my day is occupied with listening. I mean, I'm listening all the time. See, then and now I put video to the tracks, too. And so that if something reminds you, like, let's say, I got on a Paris train, I would put maybe a flash of the Eiffel Tower or something in there that would come up on the video screens and the title of the song and a dissolve. And so I've moved way beyond that. I'm not a DJ anymore, okay? I am a programmer. And it's the only way out, Peter.
Wow.
It's
the only way out.
Otherwise,
it's a wonderful
DJs
story.
Will forever be treated poorly.
It's a wonderful story because in as much as you were indicating in the club scene that there really wasn't, you had, in other words, to make a living. You had to get on with life. Yet in the long run, your music comes back to you. What a beautiful thing.
Well, it never left. And here we go. We go back to the first part of this conversation of re-examining my life and when my aunt gave me the thing and I was doing it in the basement and my mother was having...
Yeah.
You know, it's always been there. So the fact that I was not playing in the clubs after 80 or 81 or whenever the hell it stopped, I still was doing it here. I was still buying. I was still looking. I was still listening because it's something that I do. On a personal level, it is something that I do. It is something
wonderful.
That I have, I feel as if I have a gift for this. It's just that this gift really has no place in society yet.
Tom,
it's changed.
Yes. It certainly has a place here.
The consciousness of the DJ has not changed.
Yes. Well, Tom, I should tell you, we have a couple of callers. Some callers are stacking up here. We need to would like to talk with you. Tom, first we have VJC. This is Victor, and he runs Disco 935 in New York City. Victor, welcome to the show.
Hi. Hi, Peter.
Hey,
Hi,
buddy.
Tom Savarese.
Hey.
A big fan of yours from back in the day. Obviously, you never met me, talked to me, or whatever.
Is this Simonetti?
Excuse me?
Is this Victor Simonetti from Brooklyn?
No, it's not Simonetti. It's VJC. I run Disco.
Oh, hi.
How are you
I'm
doing?
I'm sorry. The connection is a little fuzzy.
It's okay. I understand who you're talking about. It's also, I've never met him also, but I've been on his site. I've downloaded some of his music, and he has a great site, and obviously he's another legendary DJ from back in the day. One quick thing is that I've also talked to Larry Sanders and Bobby Vittoretti from back in the day, also legendary DJs. Larry Sanders from Sandpiper and Bobby Vittoretti from the Trocadero Transfer here out in San Francisco.
How's he? Larry, I talked to, but Bob Vittoretti, did you say? How's he doing?
He's great. I speak him many times here in New York. He's stationed here in New York, and I obviously.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I've met Bobby, and I also met Larry. Very, very great, great guys. I mean, personality.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, very nice person.
You can't do this job and not be nice. This comes from inside of you. It comes from emotion and the right good feeling. Otherwise, you know. So most DJs are really very nice people to meet.
Exactly, because most DJs, what happens to them, it goes into their heads and they think they're a superstar. And exactly what I've been hearing the last hour or so about, you were talking about, it's not about you yourself, it's about putting the music out in front. And that's what I've been talking to Peter Godball about, exactly.
Yeah.
What I do. I don't try to put myself out in front and center stage. It's about pushing the music, and exactly what you were saying about playing the extended version. If it's 15 minutes, let it play 15 minutes. Don't break it up. You know, it's
well. If it's boring 15 minutes, you don't play it. I do
exactly.
have to mention that I do have to mention that now when I play. Or on that segment that just played, there was a song from Germany called Tone Art. And it's this guy called Tiefschaff. And the song is probably, a third more in length. I did cut out a couple of parts where he goes off. You know, and I made it more commercial. In other words, Wheel of Fortune, Wheel of Fortune, come my way. In other words, I think that's a very commercial riff, and I think that people would sing that song because it's delightful. But he goes in the middle, he goes off a bit, you know, where there's this beatless break, and I took it out.
I understand. Sometimes some of the stuff gets repetitious, and sometimes you got to, as a DJ, you know when to edit it out. In other words, say, okay, wait a minute,
but
this part is too boring. Let me spruce it up a little bit.
Yeah, you cut it out. Now we can cut it out. Before we couldn't.
Back in the day, you couldn't. It was a different type of a listenership back in the day.
No, we didn't have the tools.
Right,
now we have the tools. We take the file, we cut out the part, we put the parts together and hit it. And
right,
it just works.
Right,
and sometimes you can create a record for the artist. Now, this guy, if he's heard that track that I played, there's no reason in the world why that shouldn't be playing on the radio because it's interesting.
Well, Tom, the thing is that there's a lot of music out even today that I don't understand why it's not being played on radio or XM satellite, whatever.
Well, you got to figure that radio is not about you.
It's about
the money and commercial.
Right, exactly. The ad dollar. It's about the ad dollar. You know it. I mean, obviously, you're 13 years older than me. I'm 52 years old, whatever you are. I don't want to mention. But
64.
Right, whatever. So, but the thing is, the fact of the matter is, obviously, you've been in the business longer than I have. But I mean, I started way back in the mid 70s. And I've been, a DJ back in the day, and obviously no one knows who I am. But the fact of the matter is why I'm calling is that I also have that 5-CD set that you were talking about.
Right.
That I bought on eBay.
I have no idea, and I don't even want to know what's on that.
Oh, anyway,
I don't even want to know. That was something I don't even remember.
Well, all I know is that what I heard, it's a 5-CD set, and I know it was done live. I mean, in my opinion, it's a great mix, because I've heard Bobby Vittoretti's mixes. I've heard Larry Sanders' mixes.
I did that at home.
No, it sounds great, because it's something that I used to do, too, but I don't have any of my mixes back in the day, neither.
Yeah, I don't have any.
Somebody has my mixes. I can't find them, neither. So
yeah, you see, I sold this guy who was building a loft in New York City.
Right.
I built his sound system.
Right.
And I provided the tape for a New Year's Eve party he was having.
Exactly.
I made it at home. And, you know, it's a little bit different. But now, if he was redesigning his loft at home, I mean, forget about it.
Well, you know what? I wouldn't worry about it, because if someone's a true disco listener from back in the day, they would appreciate the disco mixing from back in the day, because it's not about really that you train wreck or not, because to me, I'm a DJ myself. I enjoyed back in the day the legendary DJs like you and Bobby and Larry and I don't know if you ever heard of Ted Currier
Currier, yes.
Yeah, obviously he used to do some mixes for KTU and BLS, and obviously he did the editing thing. But obviously, I never heard him do live mixes, but I heard him do edit mixes, which was amazing. He was amazing.
Yeah, well, I do that now. I mean,
no,
back then I used to edit the tape for Disconet when I could.
No, exactly. I also heard some of your. I heard a couple of edits that you did for Love Symphony Orchestra.
Yes.
The Let Me Be Your Fantasy.
Yeah.
And Let's Make Love in Public Places.
Right.
I mean, I've heard these mixes. Someone sent them to me about a year ago. These are amazing remixes that I never heard.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, when I heard it, I said, why wasn't these mixes played instead of the LP versions, which I have, but I never heard these mixes that you did. It's just astounding. It's just amazing.
Well, I did the whole album for them. What they did after that, you know, the record companies, I had a name. They wanted to use my name. You know, it wasn't Let Me Be Your Fantasy and Love in Public Places. They were okay dance records, but they were not.
They were not hit. They were what they call obscure stuff. But the obscure stuff, which still sounds great today, because they weren't burnt out like a lot of the stuff that you continue to hear over and over again. After a while, it's just like it's a nuisance to the ear.
I mean,
to me, in my opinion, I mean, Gloria Gaynor's "I Will Survive," but Casey and the Sunshine Band, Macho, you know, Village People, you know, the Bee Gees, all that stuff. It was great back in the day, but they continue to throw it down your throat today, which is I mean, it's great. It was great disco music, but can we play something different?
Yeah, we got to move on. Disco
was
a burp
exactly.
in the stratosphere of dance music. You know,
right,
I mean, we were dancing way before the disco came around. Get me wrong, I am not ungrateful for disco. I just think that you know, it had its moment, and that was it.
But you know,
and it's like this guy in Poland who runs the DJS Portal site.
Right,
he he doesn't have a mind. He'll come back to me and say all this techno shit and this other minimal, and I happen to like good techno and good minimal, and in the right place and time it has its purpose, but he doesn't consider, he just is disco.
Right,
and
that's
fine.
What happens with me and you, we're DJs, so we have to expand our minds, and sometimes people who just love disco music, they can't get out of that time zone. they got to.
But it's like the hippies that never got past the 60s.
Exactly.
You know, till today, that
right.
will walk around with
right.
the long hair and
exactly.
God bless you. And,
right.
Hey,
Tom, you're in the same boat that I'm in. One thing is, when you're a DJ, you have to expand your mind. You have to expand to different types of sounds, different types of whatever's happening. You got to jump into it. You just can't stay in the same zone because.
Yeah.
To me and you, it's boring. You gotta. I like house music. I like
house music
dance.
Too.
Right. I like freestyle music. I like. There's a lot of different types of, and it's all dance music. But the problem
it's all got
people,
its place.
It's all got a beat. If it got a beat, why can't it be played?
Well, of course it can be played, and that's
right.
what's so terrific about being a programmer in the dance hall, because you're not limited by. Commercial radio and their restrictions, but their, you know, their time thing, and every minute is money. And in a club, you can play whatever
right.
you
it,
know
it
is viable.
The club,
it's got to be good though.
Right, but if the club is like commercialized, in other words, they want you to play the radio versions all the time or whatever's happening radio. I tend to not want to. I can't do that. I gotta be who I am. Where I gotta push whatever I feel is hot at the time. I can't worry about that. If it's 10 hot radio mixes from back in the time right now that I have to play over and over again. I mean, I get bored doing.
Well,
that.
That's
I like
why
to,
I use the computer because now. Exactly. Now you see people as a group are reluctant to change. And I, as a DJ, love change.
Well,
so there's got
to
be some sort of balance between what I do and they do. So
right.
when I can move them up a notch, I do.
Exactly.
And but now I don't have to worry about that because
yeah,
I'm not playing anywhere specifically.
Well,
if I had to keep a dance floor now, I would do things, you know, differently for that
right.
medium. But
exactly.
For a listening medium, I don't worry about it.
Neither do I, because I run Disco 93.5. If people like what I'm playing, fine. If they don't like, well, then, you know, skip along.
You,
I'm not going to worry about it.
You will know. They will let you know if they like you. And if they like you, it means what they're saying to you is that they like your taste. And that's what you're being paid for. Is your people are like people who like what I do like the taste that I have in music, and there were times when I had to be commercial, especially with an audience you don't know. You play safe and you give them what you think they know, and you know, go from there.
Wonderful guys, I have to. You go ahead, VJC, but I have to jump in because the callers are stacking up.
Well, you know what? It's getting late. It's 10:40 here in New York. I know it's getting late. You got 20 minutes left in the show. All I want to really actually is to congratulate Tom for his great work from back in the day that I only heard some of your mixes, like I said, that I got. And that I appreciate this fact that I'm talking to one of the legendaries from back in the day.
Anytime you want to talk to me, my email address is on DJS Portal. I'd be delighted to exchange whatever you'd like to exchange.
Okay, Tom.
I've always been out there. All the DJs, my email address has always been there.
Well, if you want to, just check out my website at disco935.net. And obviously you see that I have a lot of other DJs, like I said, Larry Sanders and Bobby Vittoretti and yada, yada. So whatever you see my website and vice versa, I'll see if I can email you, and we can
and that'll
together.
Get us connected, and then we'll go from there.
Wonderful.
Exactly.
Wonderful.
All right. Let me go because I know you got another caller, and you got about 20 minutes left in the show. And Peter,
thank you.
You always
yes, sir.
Do a great job, and we'll be talking, and I hopefully want to be on one of your shows next in the future.
Yes, sir. I've got you covered. We want to have you back. In fact, I already want Tom back. So yes, we'll have you back.
Okay, Peter and
to
Tom, good luck in your endeavors.
Thank you very much, and the same to you.
I
just want you to know that I, all of you, I've always loved the DJ, and because it was such a thankless job, but you're in my thoughts and prayers. So don't just go on.
Okay,
write me an email and we'll keep in touch.
Okay, Tom. Thanks, and Peter.
Thank you for calling.
Night.
All right. Bye. Hi. Petey. Peter.
Okay, and I believe we are back.
We are back.
Live internet radio is certainly in place. And next we are welcoming none other than the Larry Sanders, one of the world's most fabulous DJs. Larry, welcome to the show.
Peter, how are you?
How are you this evening, sweetheart?
Pretty good. Hey, Tom Severese, how are you?
Hey, Larry, what's up?
Oh, not much. It's been a bumpy radio.
That's
life.
All right. My life has been bumpy.
I've got my seatbelt buckled up. So
yeah, going to be a bumpy night.
I've been listening, and I never knew you worked the Ice Palace.
Yeah,
that's
I'm probably the only one that's worked both.
Yeah, that's
maybe it. Roy Feld worked both. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was the only one that got invited to play both places, which is an extreme honor because those men and women in the Grove and in the Pines, it's like this war about the two, which was better, but I managed to conquer both of those crowds, and it was fun.
Yeah, that says a lot.
The Pines was less of a, an experience for me. I did it because I gave them my word, but it was a losing proposition financially, I enjoyed it. But,
well, the money that we made, you and I worked together at the Sandpiper on alternating nights, and the money that we left the island with, barely paid for our airfare back to Manhattan. It was
right. It cost $120 to fly back and forth, and we got paid $100.
Yeah, we were lucky if we broke even.
Then I got a letter from the owner saying that the music was too good and the bar didn't do well. So go figure.
Well, interestingly enough, it's been up until about 2 months ago.
Excuse me?
31 years since we've touched base. And I'm just really glad to be back in touch with you. I really am.
No, thank you, Larry.
One thing I'd like to say to the listening audience is that the one thing that really sticks with me regarding you is that you stood in the gap for the disc jockeys and we were just talking about money, in regards to our salaries.
Yeah.
And in New York City, and because of your stand against the club owners, our salary went from $50 a night to $250 a night.
Yeah.
And you were our union rep, if you will, without a union. And,
well, they were just impossible people.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for that.
When Hollywood, you remember, I don't know if you remember this or not, because I don't know if you came along later. But the old Peppermint Lounge on 45th Street.
Sure, which became Hollywood, sure.
Which became Hollywood. There were seven of us playing there, and nobody knew who it was. Nobody knew who we were. They didn't put any sign up. We were just jukeboxes. They should have had a jukebox. Now they can have a jukebox because the software is there. But then they didn't. Are we still here?
Tom, I just wish you well with all your present endeavors, your future endeavors. I hope you continue, even though you're not working now, but when you get a venue again, I hope you continue to pack the dance floors like you did back in the day.
Well, I don't
know. Whether it be in Jordan or America or Mexico.
Larry, there isn't a place for me to work.
Well,
there isn't a place built for me.
Well, then you'll have to build it, Tom.
Well, I've been trying to do that in the sense, but, I'm talking about the Studio 54 of today, there's no place really for me to work. So I'm going to do what I do, which is supply the world with what I do. Right. You know, right. And on any right. on any basis, it's not going to be haphazard, but it you know, I'll be out there, you know, and I've got friends, and I'm happy to know that I have the support of disc jockeys, and that they didn't forget me, because I never forgot them.
Right. Well, listen, God bless you. Hey, God bless your mom for not shutting you down in the basement.
Oh, my God. I thought they would have to carry her off because the basement was a wood floor, and it would bounce when these 58 graders would come over and dance to Rockin' Robin. And, you know, I mean, she would just freak out. She'd come down the stairs, and she'd look around, and we're all going there, you know, to this 20-watt stereo system. I mean, we were going anyway. So
yeah, the future was in the basement.
Yeah, the future was. I really didn't realize that until I started to examine the past and how it all just came about. And that aunt of mine, they're all gone now, you know. So. And I'm right behind them at 64, you know.
Yeah,
but I can
we
still
all
dance. And I can still move. And thank God the equipment is still working. So as long as I can do that, I will try to help people and create the mood and give them reason to want to throw their hands up and
There you go. Well, listen, I'll give room for the next caller and
thank
I'll see you on the dance floor, Tom. See you on the
I'll
dance
be talking
floor.
To you.
Care. Happy Easter.
Thank you for calling, Larry.
Okay.
Appreciate your call.
Take care, Peter.
Bye, sweetheart. And we also have none other than Mr. Bobby Vitteretti on the line to talk to you, sir. Oh, yes. Bobby, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Thank you, Peter. Hello, Todd.
Hey, Vitteretti. How you doing? Marilyn and I used to sit in New York and go, Bob Vitteretti, well, you know, because you were out in San Francisco, you were the name on everybody's tongue, you know. And
I was one of the ones taking a chance living on that fault line you're talking about. Well, you're
oh, my goodness, let's not even go there. 1994 in Burbank was a year to remember.
You know, I've never met you, but I've danced.
No.
You know, we got so much in common.
Yes,
know?
We do.
Captain Mike from Disco Net, right?
Captain Mike.
Mike Wilkinson. We both had managers. You're one of the people that inspired me to get a business manager.
Yeah, well, you know, it was the right thing to do because you had to put somebody between you and the club owner because they were just...
When I went out to the West Coast, they were getting like $1.380 an hour, or a night, well, let's say about...
How much?
50,
I started off at 20, listen to this, in Hollywood on 45th Street. We got paid $40, and if the bar hit $1,200, you got an extra 20. So we got $60, which immediately the next day went to downstairs records to buy the imports and stuff like that so we could be ready for the next show or whatever.
Yep.
You know, and in the scheme of things today with inflation and everything else, I think the guys, there are some guys that are making a lot of money
now, you know. I'm sure everybody's sharing music over the internet, you know. I'm sure.
Yeah, well, this is great because now it's taken the record companies out of the loop a bit.
Yeah,
you know? So now they have to break the record on the internet. And everybody and his mother is a record producer now. I mean, we got DJ this in Taiwan and DJ this in Shanghai and who are remixing records and putting them out there, you know? So... You know, the record companies probably don't even know what to do anymore.
Let me ask you something, Tom. I'm sure you don't have your records in crates, but I love the Metro, by the way.
Isn't that great?
Where do you store your music? You put it in iTunes?
Excuse me?
Where do you store your music?
I have a terabyte of drive storage. which is 1,000 gigabytes. So I store them on hard drives, removable hard drives, and, you know, back them up. And really, this is a very interesting question, because basically now I really look for artists, people that can give me 4 or 5 tracks that are so interesting. And they're not, there aren't many. There were never many of those. The single track people, the one-hit wonders, if I come across something and it's really terrific, I'll keep it. To me, all of these tracks are tools, and they're tools for me to achieve what I want to do. Music is a disposable art form. And, something may be a hit on the dance floor and you'll never hear it again in 100 years. I mean,
okay,
how many songs can you rename, can you name from the 70s that have become standards?
Let's have a look.
And what I mean by that is where other artists of today are making it over. It's like Fever by Peggy Lee was made over by Madonna. Done well, okay? But how many songs from that period I will survive? There aren't that many that I can name.
Okay, wait, let me squeeze something in. But don't you miss Sugar Pie Guy or Can't Fight Your Love? Well, yeah, I'll always love my mama. Those will never die.
No,
they
I don't miss them.
Die.
I think they're good.
Right?
I think they're good, and I liked them then. It's not something I... If I came to where you were playing and you played them, I'd be very happy to hear them. But it's not something on my mind. It's not something I do not...
Sometimes you pull out a song like that 10 years, 15 years later, and you get goosebumps going right up your spine.
Because I haven't
heard this for years.
Yeah, well, why is that? Because the songs are visual. They create a place in your mind. Like somebody will say, oh, I remember exactly where I was when I heard that. Well, the power of the music, the power of the song is to conjure mental images about it. But, you know, there's so much music out there that to go backwards, for me, is not something I do. Except...
I never want to forget my past.
I don't forget my past.
I have no regrets.
No, I don't. I have some regrets. The music I have no regrets about because it's music.
Well, we're the pioneers, Tom.
And we'll all wind up in Forest Lawn, and they'll put an LP on my tombstone.
Get out of here.
Or one of the little RCA 45 players.
Yeah.
That would be perfect.
The dog looking in the thing.
Hey, listen, I've got one of your gold records. What is it? Dance, 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 right?
Oh, you got it?
Yeah, I got one. Are you kidding me? I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, that's the only one I have left. The rest broke. I gave them all to my mother. Listen to this. This is an interesting story. I mean, interesting. It's an anecdote. When I moved to San Francisco, because I lived in San Francisco for 3 years, I gave them to my mother. She wrapped them in newspaper and put them in the garage. And I thought that, you know, she's right. So now they're in the garage. They're not wrapped, but they're in a cabinet. I don't have them.
All right. Well, listen, I'm going to hang up. I'm going to go. I think I'm going to Windex yours down. It looks a little dusty here.
Okay.
I mean,
thank you for calling
me. Well,
it's very, very nice.
Tom,
and maybe one day we will meet.
Check out my website. You'll see it on the web, okay? And I'm doing wonderful things with my old music.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye, Tom.
Bye,
thank you, Bobby. Thank you so much for joining us, Bobby. Tom, there's something I wanted to tell you about the music and this show. When we don't have guests, and we have those nights are called just us nights on the show. And when we have just us nights, what we do is we have an imaginary gay bar across the street. And we call it sometimes we call it God's Little Gay Bar, and sometimes we call it the Paradise Dance Hall.
Perfect.
And what we do is, yes, what we do is the various folks that have been on the show, for instance, Bobby and Larry and Hank and all of the folks that have been guest DJs in the show, and VJC too, of course, we devote the last anywhere from half hour to maybe 20 minutes to playing a mixed set. And Tom, I would be honored if you would participate in that. Well, what we do is we put it on a rotation so that everybody has a night during the week, and it varies from week to week. I try to release a schedule. But if you would participate in that, that would be wonderful. What would happen is we introduce the DJ who's playing at God's Little Gay Bar, the Paradise Dance Hall, and then we run their set of premixed music for the last half hour of the show. And the listeners love it. I love it. We get exposed to a very wide range of music, and I think you would be absolutely perfect for that. If you would give that some thought, I would love to have you added to that list of people.
Okay, I'll give it some thought.
Okay, we would love to have that, and I'll send you a little information on that later.
That'd be good. I would certainly consider that. A half an hour, I could probably do about five or six songs.
Actually, it's anywhere from 18 to 25 minutes, but a max of half hour. But 18 to 25 minutes is perfect. In fact, the mix set that you sent this evening was just
perfect
timing, around about 23 minutes, 18, 23. But of course, we would credit you and give links to whatever websites or whatever you'd like us to reference. But it's sort of a who's who in the DJ, from the DJs, it's such an honor to have folks of your caliber doing that on this show. I'm not worthy, as they say. So in any case, I just wanted to tell you about that, just to let you know that would be a great honor. Tom, you've been an absolutely wonderful guest.
Well, thank you, Peter.
Yes, I'm here. And you've been a wonderful guest, and I have really enjoyed talking to you. What an interesting story you have woven for us this evening, and in fact, we would love to have you back sometime in the future if you'd consider doing that, especially to tell us more about what's going on in Saudi Arabia and that, because that sounds very interesting, and we didn't get very deeply into that.
And I did want to talk about that, because and how that came about. Is very interesting. It's tied into astrology, and it's tied into a few things. So it's probably going to be a good venue for me. They love me, and that's when I'm loved, I can be so easily manipulated.
Oh, that's priceless. Oh, boy, can I identify with you there, Tom?
Yeah.
The story.
I mean,
the whole show.
We're men,
Yes, yes, yes. What I did for love,
we could
do
that too. But there are people after me to write a book, and I've been waiting on it because it's a big effort, and I go through the throes of, I don't know if people want to know about my life, it's just.
I do.
At some point, do it.
Well, that would be wonderful. And Tom, again, thank you. Thank you
You're
so
welcome.
Much for being on the show. You're remarkable. And I will send you a link to the audio archive, which you may use in any way you wish, except I'll edit out the silence and make it.
Very good.
I'll remix the show, okay?
I'll
do a remix. Okay.
No problem.
Thank you.
Let's cut
thank
out that.
You.
And if and when you want to continue, we can go down more, because there's a lot that happened back then that the dancing public and people don't really know about. And,
you could provide quite an education, I'm sure.
Well,
Tom,
I'm still alive.
Yes, you're alive. There's no question about that. We have established it firmly this evening. Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome. Good night, Peter.
Good evening. Good night, sir. And, folks, what you just heard was another DJ legend who goes all the way back to the very beginning. And what an honor to have Tom on the show. remarkable man, and delightful to talk to, an interesting perspective, and what a great mixed set. I'm sure hoping that he will join us in doing the gay bar across the street segment on the show. And so let's see, it's a Friday night, and I'm wrapping up a little late, but that's okay. We're not going to be having a horn section this evening, so it'll be in replay. So this is the last live programming for the evening. And but be sure and tune in tomorrow evening. Tomorrow evening for Billy Shears. Billy Shears, the world's most fabulous straight man, and also a remarkable musical expert. And his shows are always, without question, informative and entertaining. And his show runs at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And I'm not sure about Matt. I believe it's just Billy running, I'm not sure that we can schedule. Except for Billy, I never forget Billy Shears. He's our magic man. And I've enjoyed having you with me. And thank you for putting up for the little it glitches on the internet. You know, it's live radio. What can I tell you? And so, in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to.